Hello and welcome to another episode of the S-Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects that begin with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm Owen Fong.
And with us are two returning guest hosts, Mr. Danny Suthavarakam from OopAct.com. How are you, Danny?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And also from the Good, the Bad, the Movie Review, Miss Lita Cho. How are you, Lita?
I'm very sick.
Excellent. So let's go straight into the topic, this week's topic being Sega. And let's go right into that usual question we like to ask at the very beginning. When was the first time you had an experience with a Sega game?
For me, it was when I was around 6 or 7 years old, right after the Atari. We bought ourselves a Sega Master System because it was cheap. We found it at a garage sale, I think. We started that up, and we started playing that over our Atari games because it was new, it was fun, it was great. I grew up on Alex Kidd. I grew up on Choplifter and Alien Syndrome. So that's, you know, my childhood experience. I didn't actually grow up on Mario like you kids. You didn't grow up on any video games at all, right?
No, I had a Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah, okay.
And that's it for about a decade and a half.
So anyway, the great thing about the Master System that I remember is that there was no such thing as a start button back then. The start button was just the one button. And to pause was actually a function of the system. So for Choplifter, we were really bad at shooting games in general back then. You know, that was the Space Harrier style of shooting game where you're behind someone who's moving around the screen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, that was half of Choplifter. The Choplifter had top-down and, you know, Space Harrier style.
Okay.
And so my cousins and my sister were not very good at Choplifter. So, and this was before the era of the slow-motion controller. So what we had instead of the slow-motion controller was me sitting in front of the Sega Master System, hitting the pause button on the system as fast as I could.
Nice.
And that's how I grew up. I grew up with Alex Kidd. I grew up with Wonder Boy and Monster Land, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I actually grew up as an NES kid. I actually didn't start playing Sega games until, I think, Genesis. And I'm sure we're going to be talking about this later on, but we all remember those Sega games that were Disney games? Aladdin game, Lion King.
Okay.
That's how I started playing Sega games.
Quackshot. Quackshot was good.
Oh, I love Quackshot. I would kill to play Quackshot right now.
I'll be honest with you. Most of my experience with Sega systems in general starts and ends with the Dreamcast. I only knew Sega in commercials for the longest time.
You played the Saturn with us as often as anybody. Saturn,
yeah, so
Bomberman.
My first experience with the Sega system would have been on the Saturn, Bomberman, and Radiant Silver Gun.
Yeah.
Ten player Bomberman.
Ten player Bomberman and Radiant Silver Gun. Especially when G would intentionally kill himself just so that he could harass Dorian. As an outside bomber, as a mad bomber?
That's pretty much where I got my idea. That's pretty much where I got my concept of multiplayer gaming from, was 10-player Bomberman. That's okay.
There's no better way, 10-player Bomberman.
So, Miss Lita, I also know that you grew up as a Sega kid, not a Nintendo kid.
Yeah, I guess when I was 10 years old, I got a Christmas present as a Sega Genesis. It was really cool because, like, the graphics were really awesome to us. That's all I remember. And we would play Sonic all the time. And then me and my brother would fight over it because I was bigger at the time. I win. So, so that was really awesome. That's all I grew up with. And then we would have fights about, like, who was better, Mario or Sonic. So I would be like, you know, we would get into fights over that because, like, we would go to church and then we'll talk about, like, the video games we would play. And that's how we would get into fights over it. It was really petty, now that I think about it.
So actually, you grew up pretty much, I think all of us grew up kind of this way. There was always that playground fight about which was better, Nintendo or Sega.
Well, actually, we never really got into that fight at my house. We just knew Sega was better.
You didn't have any cousins that had, like, Nintendo?
I had second cousins who had Nintendo, and the thing is that in Nintendo we only played for Final Fantasy. Everything else we played on Genesis.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Very nice.
Especially when they released the second Genesis controller that made the Genesis just much better to play Street Fighter 2 on.
Huh.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah, the
I
little
know exactly
extra
what
buttons.
You're talking
the precursor
about.
To the Saturn controller,
yep,
was
the
it?
Precursor to the Saturn controller, yeah. The XYZ buttons.
Those controls too.
Incidentally, yeah.
Which sadly, the XYZ buttons made Streets of Rage worse, but they made Street Fighter better.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Saturn controller, by the way.
Best pad ever for a fighting game especially.
Yeah, I remember you still recommend those controllers to me, because you can use them on PS3, right?
I've got two right now. I've got two USB ones sitting there right now. You want to try them?
Yeah, I will borrow them
first
for the
week. Free.
That's how they hook you.
That's how they hook you indeed.
All right, so I always remember one of my friends had a Sega Genesis, and I had a Super Nintendo at that time. And, you know, I love Super Mario World, Street Fighter 2, but my friend had the Genesis. He had Aladdin, Lion King. I don't know. Growing up, I always like going to his place and playing on the Genesis, even though I still had viable games at my house.
Part of that is because the grass is greener on the other side. The other part is because, you know, Sonic, when he stands still, he waggles.
Sonic 2.
Yeah.
Sonic 2 was a much better multiplayer game than any of the Mario games until recently, I think. Sunshine was the first Mario with an actual co-op mode, right?
I barely played
Sunshine, so I don't even know.
No, it was Galaxy.
Oh, Galaxy?
Galaxy had it.
That's not really co-op. You throw stars. The second player gets bored.
It's more like girlfriend mode, right?
Mario's never been about multiplayer games.
But the thing is, Sonic 2 was a great multiplayer experience. My sister would basically make me play Tails and say, hey, is that a bottomless pit? Why, yes, it is.
Carry me.
there would be carry me, because Sonic had the helicopter tail. Tails had the helicopter tail. Or more often it was, you go first, kill that thing.
Yeah, it was
because
awesome.
Tails was invincible. He wasn't invincible. He would die, but then he'd just come back,
right? Yeah. I wasn't very good at that game, so that was the first time me and my brother could play together and we wouldn't fight.
He'd be
Sonic, and I'll be like, I'll carry you. I don't know how to do anything.
This is contributing.
Sega figured this out years, decades before other people did. Co-op is fun.
It is. Are we supposed to save our list for the top five?
No. You can go ahead and...
Because there's also this really awesome, side-scrolling shooter that I really like called Airbuster, and that was like the first co-op game. Apparently it was one of the few co-op shooter games, and I would play with my friend.
Wait, all shooters by definition are co-op. Unless they are things like Twinkle Star Sprites.
Or Ikaruga.
Or Ikaruga is technically co-op.
Oh, yeah, only co-op? If you're playing it wrong.
R-Type was co-op.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
I only remember, I grew up with Gradius, so I didn't even know.
Gradius was
a single player. Salamander, Life Force was, that was co-op.
Anyway, this will be going into our Shmups podcast whenever that one comes out.
Oh, really?
But that it won't. We've said it, so now it's in this podcast.
But that was like my first Shmup, and that was really, really cool because it was like, oh my god, that's really big. You go first. You go first, Dave. I'll be like, no.
Asps. Very dangerous. You go first.
Why don't we actually, we've kind of already mentioned this, let's go into the first time you played a Sonic the Hedgehog game.
The first time we played a Sonic the Hedgehog game, Sonic was not a Genesis launch title.
Yeah, it was.
No.
Sonic, really?
No.
I remember the release of Sonic being a really big deal.
My first Genesis game was Pit Fighter, which is a very, very bad game.
Oh, Pit Fighter.
Thinking back on it, it's a terrible game. Oh. It's not good at all with its, like, three frames of fighting animation and, you know, just bad balance. And it was not even balance, just you didn't do anything. You were in a pit and you hit people for money.
But they had the graphics. That was like the first time in my life where, as a kid, I realized, man, graphics doesn't mean everything.
And so it was a big deal when Sonic came out. I remember when Sonic came out. I remember playing that very first zone, the Green Hill Zone, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, Green Hill Zone.
That was one of the first times where it's like, hey, if I hold forward, this game's really pretty. And then I run into spikes at the end and die. Okay, maybe I should learn what this level is actually like.
When not to hold forward.
No, it was one of the first games where you would explore. There were multiple paths through the level. You know, there would be the top... Usually it would be the top path if you're really good at the game, and then the bottom path if you fell off of the top path. But, you know, it had multiple ways to get to the goal. It encouraged exploration. You know, there were the secret zones and...
Hidden treasure
and, you know, all that stuff. And so in terms of design, the original Sonic is, you know, a pretty big step in the development of the platformer.
Well, I got it with the system, so I thought
It was a very, very, very popular bundle, the one with Sonic the Hedgehog.
It was a really popular bundle.
Right. And that was really cool, but that's not co-op, so only one person can play. That was the only game we had for a long time.
Well, actually, that leads us into Sonic 2, which I think everyone pretty much says is the best Sonic game.
Yeah,
I would say so.
Wait.
But I have barely played Sonic CD.
Sonic CD was good. Sonic Spinball was the hardest game I've ever played, I think.
Wait. Really?
Sonic Spinball.
I love playing Sonic Spinball.
I was never good at pinball.
Okay.
So.
I was going to say, that's a some pretty strong words there.
Well, it's not a kid. Depends on define hard here.
Shinobi.
I like
this
Shinobi.
This is for kids, dude.
What?
No, Sonic is for, like, all ages. You can't make it Shinobi hard.
Fine.
Shinobi wasn't that hard. What are you talking about?
For a kid, I thought it wasn't it hard.
Well, okay, so
I've never played Shinobi.
The PS2 Shinobi is a very difficult game, but I loved it. Anyway.
I didn't say it was bad.
I'm talking about the original Shinobi for the Sega Master System. Okay. Where, you know, it wasn't that hard as long as you had another quarter.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that's reasonable.
All right, actually, going around this table, name the best Sonic game, then.
Best Sonic game?
Best.
Sonic 2 for me. That's the best one.
Sonic 3 had music by Michael Jackson.
Oh my gosh.
Uncredited, but it had music by Michael Jackson.
Yeah, there's actually a friend out there who will smack me in the face if I don't say Sonic and Knuckles, so I'm just going to have to say Sonic and Knuckles.
Sonic and Knuckles was fun because it had that flip-top cartridge, and you could stick in Sonic 2 and
Sonic 3.
Sonic
Knuckles with Sonic 3 in it.
Yeah, you could stack them together. That would be awesome.
It's specifically what has been told to me, that if I say anything else, I will be smacked.
All right, now I'm going to have to go with Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
Oh, you had to go there.
Which is basically just Puyo Puyo.
I know. Actually, if we're talking about real Sonic games, I would have to say Sonic 2.
Yeah.
That's the one I remember the
Puyo
most.
Puyo Puyo is a good game. I mean, yeah.
Puyo Puyo is its own genre. I don't know what you're talking about.
Puyo Puyo is great. So anyway, let's go back to what we were talking about Sonic, weren't we?
Sonic 2 is pretty much the first time I've actually played a co-op game when I think about it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Then you have to go into Streets of Rage and beat 'em ups. But yeah, I think Sonic 2. I can't think of anything earlier than that.
Well, depends on if you went to an arcade or not before that, you know, with all the beat 'em ups before.
Like the Ninja Turtles arcade game,
you know, Michael Jackson's Moonwalker as an arcade game.
Yeah,
it could be
brilliant
Red Michael,
game.
Silver Michael, or Gold Michael, I think it was.
Robot Michael. Red Michael.
Yeah, let's...
And all dressed like Smooth Criminal Michael.
Let's never speak of this again.
What do you mean?
Oh, we'll be speaking about it.
We'll be speaking about it when we get to Michael Jackson's Moonwalker for the console.
It was worth a shot.
You are not going to... And besides, your wife loves Space Channel 5.
I know,
you're
going
to get into Space Michael soon.
I know.
Space Michael.
For some reason, Michael Jackson is very heavily integrated with Sega, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it's because they had a good business relationship going after the license for Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
All right. But let's actually step away from the Genesis for a little bit and start going into, man, I don't even like to say it, but it feels like the starting trends of the downfall of Sega. So
Saturn.
We're going to be talking about, even before that, Sega CD and the 32X.
Well, the Sega CD wasn't
that was fine.
That was fine. It wasn't necessarily Sega's fault that the Sega CD failed. It's just that right around when the Sega CD came out, people decided, as executives, that you know what we can do? We can make FMV games, full motion video games. These are going to be the greatest things ever. So they made Night Trap. They made Marky Mark Make My Video.
Oh God, Night Trap! I did not need a reminder of that game's existence.
Sewer Shark.
Oh, Sewer Shark.
And so you know, you just had really bad games in FMV on the Sega CD, and yeah, that's really what did it. I mean, the 32X. Had one good game, Knuckles Chaotix, but it cost too much. Same thing with the Sega CD. The main thing that the PlayStation did better than Sega ever did was it brought CD technology home for an affordable price.
That's true, yeah. Mm. But here's the thing I was thinking about. With Sega CD, that was pretty much the first big console. Well, I can't even call it console.
It was an add-on.
But it was Sega reaching towards the future. And them reaching too
far
soon, yeah.
I mean,
that's what happened
with the Saturn.
Yeah,
because
and
the
Saturn with
had
the Dreamcast.
The Saturn had two processors. Problem was that it was too hard to program for because dual processing was not good enough yet, and so people went to the easier platforms to program for.
Yeah, I know.
The Dreamcast had a modem.
Dreamcast had the modem, the online play, and also let's talk about something else that Sega did. Way before everyone else, and that's Sega Channel, which I guess I'm the only one here that knows what it is.
I vaguely remember it, but I don't remember it well enough.
So it was the idea that you could subscribe to a channel through Time Warner Cable, and then you could actually play a whole bunch of different games streaming down towards your system. I mean, I remember that from hotels.
Didn't they have that in a lot of hotels?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
it was the luxury for kids to have it. But then now when I think about it more, we're almost getting to that point. Actually, we do have that point in which we have GameTap.
In GameTap,
And that was during the Genesis era, and Sega was already thinking in that direction. It was just a problem of
doing it way too early.
Yeah, before anybody was ready.
Nobody was ready for it.
The network wasn't in place for it. Wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
that
was pretty awesome, right? Can you imagine if you had if you had that ability on your regular consoles right now? Of course, that would not make enough money for them.
And also, it wouldn't
bandwidth would be so heavy.
Yeah, bandwidth use would be really heavy. You have to remember that these games, when you look at them again, they're built on like 512K.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of let's jump off there. Sega did go into the dual processing technology with the Sega Saturn, and it sort of felt like once the Saturn came out, we started seeing so many problems from Sega.
Well, it started with the price point and the difficulty to program for the Sega Saturn, because it's hard to program for, and it started out at $400 for the Sega Saturn. I mean, I bought it for Guardian Heroes. I didn't care. I just bought it, and I played the heck out of Guardian Heroes.
And that's okay.
But I mean, the PlayStation had just much more support, and then it had its giant killer in Final Fantasy VII, which just made the PlayStation
put it on the map.
Yeah,
The map around it.
Built the map around it. Yeah, everybody wanted to program for the PlayStation.
But it wasn't like that in Japan, because like there's a lot more.
Well, the thing was that the Saturn in Japan got a lot more support, largely because it had a couple of genres under its belt that the U.S. doesn't care about. For example, Spawn games. Well, it wasn't actually Spawn. There was something in for the Saturn in Japan called the Yellow Label and the Red Label. Yellow was, you know, like a little bit risque, things happened like that. Red was the Pia Carrot games.
Oh.
Where you should not be playing these games unless you're an adult. The Saturn inherited a lot of that audience from the PC Engine.
Huh. Oh, I had never heard about this.
Yes.
I mean, what was this Red Label like?
It wasn't actually Spore.
It was softcore, right?
It was softcore,
Dang, I had no idea.
That explains so much, though.
This explains a lot about me, doesn't it?
Well, it explains a lot about... actually, yeah, come to think of it. I'm kind of not surprised at all, come to think of it, that you actually know that.
Supplies!
Supplies.
But going back to the Sega Saturn, I mean, think about it this way, that it launched really expensive.
Yep, it launched
too
early. It was
difficult to program for.
Yep.
Does this sound a bit familiar with our current generation?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm wondering about. It seems almost like at this point, like Sony did kind of do the same thing as Sega, went a little too far.
With the cores?
And now it's starting to hurt them back. I mean,
well,
but then again, Sony has tons of money as opposed to Sega.
I don't know about that. Well, as compared to Sega.
Sony has more money than Sega.
That's okay.
So,
that's true.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they can ride this tidal wave out, but man, it seems so weird now hearing about it again, that the Saturn prepared itself in this kind of way to fail, and Sony did kind of the same thing. And I'm not saying that PlayStation 3 is a failure, I'm just saying, you know, sales have been much lower than expected.
Everything else, yeah.
Yeah.
They dropped the prices.
Yeah, but even then, like, launching at $600, you know, hearing that is, you know, back then, hearing launching at $400 is, like, the same kind of sticker shock.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There was definite sticker shock.
But, I mean, let's talk about, you know, the Sega Saturn still had a great library of games, although I felt like a lot more of the good ones were on... Well, okay, the one I loved the most on Sega Saturn was Japan Only, and I'm...
Radiant Silvergun?
Yeah, everyone at this table has played Radiant Silvergun.
Yeah, all of you have played my copy of Radiant Silvergun.
No, actually, Lita and I played one of our friend Frank's copy of Radiant Silvergun as well.
That's Radiant Silvergun.
Radiant Silvergun is
with the running man.
Radiant Silvergun is the game that made me afraid of my own heartbeat.
Oh. It was really hard. Like
I would be just sleeping, falling asleep at night, and in my ear, I'd hear, boop, boop. Ah! Diamonds coming at me. If you've ever gotten to that last boss in Radiant Silvergun.
No, I have, and it's so short, too. It makes me sad when it's over, but still, yeah, it was like the last boss. Like, how do you even move? It's like, oh my God.
You wait for slow down. Slow down helps you.
That's what the second player is for. Shoot more! We need more particles on the screen to slow down this game.
There's a distinct point in there where you will actually, if one of you fails to dodge, you're both going to lose 3 lives each.
Because That means one of you is dead. One of you has stopped shooting. The game speeds up again, and you die.
And then you take some seconds and before you actually are lucky enough to both die at around the same time, so that you can then spam the screen enough for it to be a manageable speed again.
Oh my god, like the only way to beat this game
no,
is
it's not. You can also just be good at it, you know. Yeah, my cousin actually was able to sell videos of himself playing Radiant Silvergun with perfect runs so that people could just see them.
Whoa. Nice. That's crazy.
Yeah, I totally buy that, come to think of it.
So pretty much at this point, still the only way to play Radiant Silvergun is either to find the actual arcade cabinet.
Steal it.
Or
you do not advocate piracy.
You still have to either play it on an arcade cabinet or a Saturn. You can't even really emulate it.
Nope.
There's no way to. You can try it on MAME, but it won't work.
Oh.
And so I'm wondering, is anyone ever going to play this again? I mean,
that's a shame.
Microsoft has gone to Treasure and said, please remake Radiant Silvergun for Xbox Live Arcade.
They
and
have
Treasure
Ikaruga.
Said,
Ikaruga
exactly. They have Ikaruga, which is a great game.
It's a great game.
But I still love Radiant Silvergun more.
Yeah, I like it more too.
And what if we did get Radiant Silvergun in a modern day age with HD and no slowdown?
That would terrify me.
How would we do it? I wonder if there would be
better at the game.
If there would be an option to say turn on slowdown.
Actually, there are things like that. They've actually had those in a lot of the Xbox Live, PlayStation Network sort of games. I remember seeing that setting there. I think it was
like in Mega Man.
Like
right?
Mega Man 9, yeah. The whole, hey, if you want the full experience, I could turn the old system flicker glitch back on for you. So if they have an option to turn back on the slowdown, I'm sure it would be
great.
But
the thing is that Radiant Silvergun wouldn't make them any money for the effort it would take. It would sell to people like us.
Yeah.
And then other people, and then people like Destructoid and, Game Life on Wired and Kotaku, they would all say, hey, this game's really good, you should buy it, and no one would listen to them because it's too hard.
Aww. Yeah.
That's how it goes.
I mean, I even wonder how well Ikaruga even sold.
Yeah, that's a good question.
It didn't do that well on GameCube when
it was released.
Didn't Sin and Punishment also get a re-release? And
it was on the Wii.
Well, then again, that was because people went back to Sin and Punishment and went, oh, this game's not very good. That was for Nintendo 64. We've gone a little bit off of track here because that's a Treasure game. Anyway, going back to Sega, you know, I do remember this is a great story. When we discovered that Gunstar Heroes was on the Wii, I was sitting there going, "Hey, this is Gunstar Heroes. I wonder how much it costs." And then suddenly my lap was filled with dollars. I felt like a stripper because everybody in the room they didn't care how much it cost. They pulled out singles and just threw them at me. It's like, doesn't matter how much it costs. If it costs $10, that's enough.
Cost 50.
Buy it.
It was $8.
It was $8.
That's cool.
Yeah, because it's
worth every penny.
It's Gunstar Heroes.
I own Gunstar Heroes on 4 consoles. It's great.
That's awesome.
That's
really?
Okay.
Wait, you have the PS2 one.
I have the PS2 one. I got the Sega Ages one. I have the Genesis one.
And
I have it on Wii.
One. What's the fourth?
Game Boy Advance.
Game Boy Advance.
Oh, but that's a totally new game.
Eh.
I try not to speak
that's
of that.
That's the one I play.
Dang, then I only own it on... Oh, wait, I own it on all 4, too.
Yeah, there you go.
It's okay.
Dang.
Gunstar Heroes was that good, folks. Seek it out. One of the best platform shooters of all time.
Man, I still can't even think of very many games that come close to, in terms of that kind of gameplay.
Super Contra, maybe? Maybe?
That's the thing.
Gunstar Heroes was co-op, so there's no...
I don't think
Metroid would be awesome. Anyways.
I don't think anything is ever going to be able to top the ability to throw your ally
as a weapon
into the boss.
And also, he's
that's
invincible,
cool.
So it's not that bad for him while he's in the air. It's great. Or there were there was the Dice Palace dickery, where you could just juggle your opponent and the die.
No, it's my turn!
My turn!
No!
Yeah.
That's really cruel.
If by cruel you mean awesome.
By awesome. Oh my goodness.
Speaking of good games, let's actually transition over to Dreamcast.
Oh.
Great, great library of
Soul
games.
Soul Calibur.
No, I'm not just talking. I mean, Soul Calibur, yeah, that was
Hanagumi
a launch
Tyson
title.
Hanagumi Tyson Columns.
Can you believe Soul Calibur was a launch title? That was, amazing.
The thing about Soul Calibur for the Dreamcast, it was actually a really big stepping point, and it, in a sense, kind of signaled the death of the arcade, but it was a really big stepping point in technology because the Dreamcast version of Soul Calibur was better than Arcade Perfect.
Yeah?
I mean, up until then, the golden standard was Arcade Perfect. The idea of, this matches completely what you experienced in the arcade. Calibur looked so much better than the arcade version.
people went home.
Yeah.
That was the first time when I played Dreamcast, I was like, holy crap, this looks like the arcade. Is it just the television that's making it look like this?
But yeah, it's, and I remember first like seeing, I think it was an S-Video set up for it, and it was just like jaw-dropping. The fact that, you know, this could actually be done at all was just boggled the mind. And
although, I do have to say that the Dreamcast controller was a giant whale.
Yeah, Dreamcast controller.
It was like really heavy.
Well, it wasn't that it was
heavy.
Looked
like a flying it looked like the Enterprise. It looked like the Starship Enterprise.
Exactly. Actually, I didn't have that much of a problem with it, especially because it felt fine in my hands.
It felt fine, but
the buttons, like the face buttons, were horribly cheap. Ugh. Aww. I didn't like that. Triggers were fun. That was the first time I had, you know, like that kind of gun trigger.
And then there was that VMU thing where they could sometimes add to the experience. I mean,
minigames.
You might be able to sort of extrapolate that into the DS, but probably not.
No, and even then, like, most of the time, people just bought the four times the memory one that didn't have the screen.
Didn't have the screen.
I mean, really, did the screen add much? I don't remember really any game where I was like, wow, the screen's awesome to
use. There were a few where you would look down and that would be your status screen. You know, the Resident Evil for Dreamcast, it had your health on there and things like that, so
actually,
you didn't have to pause every time.
So in Skies of Arcadia, looking down on the VMU screen, you'd see Cupel, the little floaty ball of goo thing. And you can actually feed Cupel in order to power him up. And if you fed him, the little Cupel on the VMU chewed on something. And, you know, it was just this random little cute tchotchke thing, and that's how you could tell its status, by looking down at it. Yeah, but other than that, there was never really any substantial, man, this is really necessary sort of feel. And I think it took until, like, the DS for something like that, for something on that scale, for something that actually lets people split their attention and not feel forced.
So anyway, what were we talking about again?
We're talking about Dreamcast.
The Dreamcast.
No.
So, I mean, it's not just even, like, Soul Calibur. I remember Crazy Taxi.
Phantasy Star Online.
Yeah, like, these games looked light years better than the previous generation. It was the first real sign of, oh my god, we're going into something really, really good. We're going, not good, but, like, we're going into 3D with strength now.
Yep.
Like, 3D is no longer a gimmick.
Exactly.
It is, in fact, its own design space.
Right. And the issue I had eventually with Dreamcast was everyone loved it in the beginning. And then I think after that Christmas was over, because I remember Dreamcast was the release on
$99.99.
Yeah. After that Christmas was over, it was just PS2 talk all the time. And
Sony
just
has a great marketing machine.
Yeah, where'd it go?
It's a good question.
And here was the thing to me, it's like, I could be playing Soul Calibur right now, or Choo Choo Rocket, or Crazy Taxi, or Jet Grind Radio, I guess, in the United States. Or I could be lusting over Fantavision.
Yay. And I was
Tekken Tag Tournament, which is worse than Soul Calibur.
Yeah, it was just sort of like, I didn't understand what the hype was about so much. Was it just the establishment of the Sony PlayStation?
Black, that's why.
No, but it's just that any console that's black will win.
I'm just kidding. No, that's not true.
During that time, it was just like, was it just because of the PlayStation era that made everyone want the PS2 more, or was it the actual PS2 games?
The Saturn left a really sour taste in everybody's mouths, and in a lot of cases, people kept going, well, where's Final Fantasy? Where's Final Fantasy?
Oh my god.
Where's Final Fantasy?
Oh.
I mean, the Dreamcast was devoid of games that would bring people in and keep them in for 90 hours. It had sports games, it had fighting games. Oh, the market difference is incredible, you know?
Yeah, so for all the people, for all the younger members of the audience, this is going to date me completely. This is going to sound like a total get-off-my-lawn sort of statement. But you guys have it lucky. You guys have it lucky being able to pick a console and actually have a good chance of having all these major developers release a game for it. Because console exclusivity used to be the rule. Nowadays, it's the exception. And that's a huge step.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Oh, man.
Now I'm depressed.
But yeah, I'm depressed because it was...
I loved it. And it had the main feature that would clearly win this console generation, which is who has the best games.
Also who has the best online experience,
right,
too.
Yeah, and the fact that they even had, you know, a pretty well-structured, I mean,
every experience.
One of them had a 56K modem.
I played a lot of Phantasy Star Online.
Yeah, but, and
I think a lot of people didn't know. Like,
a lot of Choo Choo Rocket, too.
Yeah, they didn't know about the online. They didn't know about, like, what games were out there. They're like, oh, because, like, PlayStation had a really good marketing system, so they didn't know at all.
I personally think also, like, I think just online presence in general wasn't really saturated enough for...
People didn't necessarily always have internet back in those days.
And nowadays it's all, if you're not online, you don't matter.
Yeah.
It's just so weird to me that Dreamcast had a lot of things going right for it.
They were just too early.
Yeah.
Not just too early, but they didn't have the third-party support.
That's true. Yeah, they didn't have EA even on their side, because EA was threatened by the 2K sports series.
Yeah. They just didn't have the support because people had bad experiences with the Saturn. Everybody had bad experiences with the Saturn.
Except
for us.
But I mean, even if let's go back to this. If you had to say which console gave you the most, you know, which one you loved the most, just with your heart, between Dreamcast and PlayStation 2, even with the PlayStation 2 having been out for so long and having so many games that we've probably all played, which do you still favor more? And I'm not talking about, like, you know, let's talk about rankings, or I'm going to put together a spreadsheet about does it win this category or this, just which one with your gut you like more.
You know, I hate to put it like this, but games on the PlayStation 2 was a business transaction. The Dreamcast was love.
Yeah.
Well.
Man. Damn, man.
Cry.
Sorry.
Oh.
Four-player multiplayer. PS2 like had to multi-tap for it. Choo Choo Rock. Oh, I have so many stories about playing the Dreamcast in the dorms, and
me and my roommate were as a combination just an unholy terror at Choo Choo Rocket.
They forced me to play Choo Choo Rocket on a DDR pad. I was so good at it on my dorm floor, which led to a long tradition of giving me handicaps in games. I had to play columns with my feet.
Yeah,
I would beat people.
I played on the twin sticks. Yeah. We all have those random stories.
I remember in my dorm room, we got into Virtua Tennis really heavily.
Virtua Tennis was brilliant.
Awesome. And I only had two regular controllers and two arcade sticks. So two people would play Virtua Tennis with the arcade stick. And then we gotten so loud all the time that we actually, not the actual resident assistant, but the actual director of the dorm came to us and said, "You have to quiet down." And that's how much fun we were having.
Oh yeah!
And, oh god, I think about
Virtua
that now.
Tennis was the Virtua Tennis was one of the break games at Joyce at GamePro.
Nice, love that game.
Love that game.
And then there's also like all the arcade perfect games too. Even sometimes better, House of the Dead 2. We had Crazy Taxi. We had Virtual On.
The problem with Virtual On was that it wasn't very accessible.
That's true. But you like
I don't
to
know
have
what you guys are talking
sticks.
About. I had
you,
a
be
of twin sticks.
You be quiet, Mr. Assault Vectors.
What?
Just thrust vectors, sorry.
Just because I did, you know, geometry for the purposes of playing this game doesn't mean that it's not.
If you have to do mathematics in order to play a game to try and get your angle as close to 90 degrees as possible to your opponent's dash, that's inaccessible to common people.
Geometry.
If people can't do Shoryuken motions, then they can't figure out what a perpendicular angle is, alright?
Well, it's not even that. I mean, I think people were just intimidated by the controls of the arcade version and the fact that they're completely different in the pad version.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That and 2 and 4 never came out. Not bitter at all.
So,
Voot.
I'm pretty sure this is just going to be a spur of Dom and Danny going off, but was the Dreamcast the best system ever for fighters?
No, the Saturn was.
Oh.
The controller was much better for the Saturn.
No, I'm talking about the game library.
I'm leaning toward the Saturn on the game library, too.
Ooh.
You had Fatal Fury Special on the Saturn, and you had various Capcom collections on the Saturn. You had Darkstalkers on the Saturn. I mean,
all I can tell you is Third Strike is on the Dreamcast. That pretty much ends my portion of the argument.
That's you.
Yeah, that's me.
All right, but I mean, if you were talking about the fighting game genre, was Sega pretty much the one that owned it?
Well, that was the thing. PlayStation specialized in 3D game programming. That was their big thing. And that was what they pushed. So their 2D aspects were always lagging behind things things like the Saturn and the Dreamcast, because the Dreamcast was carrying a lot of the, you know, well, it was, you know, brought over the people who were playing on the Saturn, who actually successfully found, you know, found a game that they liked in the Saturn. So the Dreamcast, all, that was pretty much like their 2D niche. And once 2D officially, you know, went the way of the dodo, it took the Dreamcast with it for the most part.
Alright, so here comes the part of the show, well, the topic of the show that we don't really like thinking about. When Sega shifted over to just software development.
Well, there was one great...
of their hardware.
Did any of you ever play Sega Gaga?
What is that?
It was one of the last games that they released for the Dreamcast. I actually have it hidden around somewhere. And it is about the end of Sega as a hardware developer. And it's kind of hilarious and really sad at the same time because, I mean, one of the first things you do is you go into the offices of AM1, AM2, and AM3, which no longer exist. And it's a dungeon crawl. You beat up all the developers who are weeping at the end of the... and you beat them up and you say, Sega will be reborn! After that, it's an economic simulation game. But in between, there were these really great slash hilarious cutscenes. There was one that is a sock puppet theater that is obviously taken from behind the Sega logo on their front lawn. And it essentially is a sock puppet talking to the little princess doll, and it goes, Princess! Why are Sega games so good? Because they are made with love.
What?
Sega Gaga was there.
Why don't you have this game here right now?
I don't have a Dreamcast hooked up here.
I'll go get mine. I'll go get mine.
Sega Gaga. I should show it to you. You have to take over Sega. You go over and you you beat up the developers in order to get them back in line. Oh man, there's all of these in jokes apparently because one of the lead developers in that is represented by a crying guy in a bear suit.
Oh my God.
It's so weird. So weird.
So actually, is the last game that was released for the Dreamcast, was that the Sega Sanshiro game?
Sega Sanshiro game was the last game for the Saturn.
That was Saturn.
Yeah, that was the goodbye to the Saturn. Yeah.
Sorry, that would make sense.
Sega Sanshiro, the Sega Sanshiro game itself was just a bunch of mini games, whatever, you know, meh. But it gave you access, instant access, before the age of YouTube
to all of the commercials.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah,
that was why I got that one.
If you don't know about Sega Sanshiro, just YouTube it.
S-E-G-A-T-A space S-A-N-S-H-I-R-O.
Toya!
You'll thank us later.
You'll thank us.
Actually, his commercials too. I haven't seen them in years.
He was actually featured recently on Destructoid. He was badass. He was their first badass of the week. And the funny thing is that in the second comment or so on that article was, man, you guys have just ended your own.
You guys have just ended your own list.
You've just ended your own list. There's just nowhere to go from here. Look at Asashiro, the ultimate badass.
See, and that's the whole thing about it, because in addition to being Sega Sanshiro,
he was the first Kamen Rider.
He was Kamen Rider 1, the original.
That's right. I remember you told me about
that. And also, he was the father of the main character in Shenmue, who dies.
Yes. He was a voice in Shenmue.
Oh, now you're bringing back Shenmue. Oh,
the original sandbox game.
Which they will never
finish. Shenmue 3! Oh my God.
Again, it was another one of those games that was just so...
ahead of its time. It was a sandbox.
Yeah, it was a sandbox concept back before sandbox concepts were
popular.
You know,
Sega was even known, really.
Like, we didn't even know the word for it back then.
It was just called people didn't know what to
call
it.
It was more like a life RPG.
Yeah, it was like a life RPG. People were like, okay, so we do part-time jobs, we go to the arcade and play older Sega games and play the UFO catcher game, and then every once in a while we go around and ask for sailors.
Yeah. And buy capsule toys.
And buy capsule
toys and feed this cat.
Do you know where I can find some Chinese?
Hey, mister, want to wrestle?
What?
And it was one of the first games that also brought us QuickTime events, which, you know, are...
so tired now.
So tired now. I mean, was it that or Die Hard Arcade first?
I think Shenmue was the first one to really implement them completely.
Oh, yeah. Die Hard Arcade was basically just in between levels.
Yeah, in between levels, it was a little bonus thing.
Yeah.
But Sega seems like that's like the smart brother that they don't be beaten up.
Yeah, they don't look so smart now.
Yeah, but
they had a lot of good ideas.
They did.
They had a lot of good ideas.
Just too early.
Wait, 10 years later.
I mean, they basically came out with a bunch of Virtual Boys in a row, and that's what killed them.
They'll kill anything, really.
Hey, at least those Virtual Boys had good games on them.
Did they?
Well, no.
They
like
weren't Telero Boxer.
The metaphorical Virtual Boys.
The metaphorical Virtual Boys. Yeah, okay, yeah.
All right, so let's shift over. Now that Sega's gone into software development, we're starting to see sort of like these new franchises pop up. Sega's kind of back on track. We definitely have the Yakuza series over here, the Japanese name being...
Ryuga Gotoku.
And that's huge in Japan. It's not that big over here, but...
It feels to me, though, like it feels like the spiritual successor to Shenmue.
Shenmue, yes, exactly. And that's why I love the game so much, because I'm like, now it's Ryo being a badass.
Yeah.
I mean, Lita, you see me play the game, and you're like, oh, the game looks okay. The real reason I play the game is because I love Shenmue, and it's really, it's badass Shenmue.
Because I was like, the graphics don't look that great, and he just keep the fighting style looks so weird.
But it's Shenmue, and you know, it's dated, because I love that.
I love Shenmue.
I'm sure we're creeping a whole bunch of people out right now with all of this.
Well, let's go back into Sega, even like publishing-wise, they're doing Condemned, which, you know, is kind of popular with the Western audience over here.
Yeah.
And we've seen Valkyria Chronicles prove they're really back in full form brilliantly.
For developing, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not that anybody bought Valkyria Chronicles
in the
US.
And that's the problem again.
Hey, you still can.
It's the Sega curse.
Go buy Valkyria Chronicles. It's a very good game. I love the system. Please.
Wasn't it the first... You told me that was the first time you felt like your PS3 purchase was validated.
That's the only thing that I've so far felt like the PS3 was validated for. I mean, I haven't bought Flower yet, so maybe it'll go there.
Oh.
But right now, my PS3 is a glorified PS2 with a Blu-ray disc in it.
That's what we use it for. Blu-ray player. It's like a glorified entertainment system.
Meanwhile, if I had a Dreamcast hooked up to this TV, I'd still be playing it.
Yeah, I would say, hey, let's play Dreamcast for a little bit, kind of thing.
Hey, Danny, let's play Columns. I'll handicap myself. I'll play with my feet.
No, that's still not enough. I didn't know this for a fact.
Come on.
Tell you what, you find Puyo Puyo, we'll talk.
Puyo Puyo are probably on even ground. Was there Magical Drop for the Dreamcast? I think there was Magical Drop for the
Dreamcast.
There
might have been, yeah.
Because on Magical Drop, that would be where we're even, because we both have the same Twitch reflexes. And if, as I recall, our games would always come down to going, damn! And whoever said damn first would lose.
It's true.
So, let's go on towards the future with Sega. We know Mad World is coming.
We know Mad World.
And it's on the Wii, and it's the first time in a long time I've been excited about a Wii game.
I know, seriously.
I'm trying to think of the last Wii game that I enjoyed, and I think it's Dokapon Kingdom, which is just a board game.
For me, the last one I really liked was No More Heroes.
Oh, yeah,
which
you're
Mad
right.
World feels like in a more extreme version of.
Well, here's all that you really need to know about Mad World. It's from the people that brought you Godhead.
Well, that's all that we need. I mean...
Oh, that's right, because they're from the X-Clover.
X-Clover. Yeah. Now they're Platinum.
All right, but let's also Platinum talk about games. One other game I think Sega's pretty much banking on. And I'm correct when I say this. Bayonetta, right? Bayonetta is being
also
published
made by Platinum Games.
Also made by Platinum Games.
Platinum Games.
Yep.
And with...
With the guys who did Devil May Cry.
The original... It's the guy who directed the original Devil May Cry.
And are you excited about it, or...?
Yes.
Okay, there we go.
Remember how last week one of my five was Devil May Cry 4? A year after the fact, and probably next week after we're doing this, I'm probably going to go back and play God Hand, so look forward to that in our next stuff segment.
I mean, like, Sega really feels like they're coming back.
Well,
I hope so.
I hope so, because they've just been beaten down so many times with becoming Sega Sammy, and closing down a bunch of
offices,
closing down a bunch of arcades recently. Right. Bunch of Sega Worlds have closed down.
Is the San Francisco office still there?
The San Francisco office is still there.
Okay.
The thing is, they're also, you know, publishing games like the Iron Man game and things like that.
They need to live.
Hey, they gotta eat. Yeah. But let's go into one tiny little subject before we go into our top five Sega games.
Can I expand my top 10 Sega games list to... Actually, can I expand the top 5 to 10? because
sure,
I have a longer
10.
I have a longer history than you guys with
right.
Sega.
Bye. Oh, that's fine.
Because I mean, otherwise I won't be able to fit in Wonder Boy and Monster World or Alex Kidd or anything like that. You know,
all right, that's totally fine. But let's all go. Right. Let's go into one minor other detail that we probably missed: Game Gear and the Nomad. Now,
the Game Gear was bad.
I have a Game Gear.
You have a Game Gear, yeah. But what games did you have for it, and how many of them did you actually play?
Sonic 2.
That was a Nomad.
The thing
had a Nomad.
The thing took 8 batteries.
It did.
Yeah.
And it ran for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
It wanted to be the first color game, and then like when the Nomad came out.
It was the first color one.
When Nomad came out, I mean, that was also a pretty brilliant idea. Put your old games in there, and you can still play them, but still, like, the thing was a brick.
Yeah, it was humongous.
It wasn't really a portable, right? You would mostly just plug it in and just use it as a tiny handheld for your kitchen table while you're waiting for breakfast.
Yeah.
All right, that's going into the handheld.
I played Dragon Crystal on the Game Gear.
Oh, that's true.
Dragon Crystal was all right. It was my very first roguelike game.
Nice.
Actually, no, it was my second roguelike game. It was my first one was Moria for the 286.
Oh, nice.
All right, so why don't we just go into our top 5 Sega games? I know, Dom, you have
10.
more than five prepared. Why don't you list 10 through 6 right now?
All right, 10 through 6. All right, number 10 is, oh man, I can't. It's like having to kick my children for numbers 11 and beyond. All right, for number 10, I will say Alex Kidd because that was my first platformer.
Fair.
You played rock paper scissors against the bosses, so that was my introduction to game theory.
Nice.
Except some of them, you know, were easier than others because, you know, that guy with scissors for a head, yeah, you knew what he was doing. But Alex Kidd was my very first, platform game. Number 9 is going to be Space Channel 5 because that was a piece of pop art.
Yeah.
It was just art. And it had great music. That was one of the first times I actually really, really liked a dub, especially with Space Michael. Thank you, ooh la la. No, okay, so that's 10 and 9. Number 8, I'm gonna go with Sonic 3 here.
Okay.
Sonic 3 goes on that spot on the list.
That's a classic, that's fun.
Number 7 is Phantasy Star Online.
I played so much of that. I remember trying so hard to get, I don't remember what it was anymore, it might have been like a...
Some MacGuffin.
Laser-bladed scythe or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, there were a lot of those. Number 6. I'm going to have to say Sakura Taisen 3 for the Dreamcast.
All right.
Ooh, wow.
Very nice.
Not going with 2, huh?
Sakura Taisen 2 for the Saturn is higher on the list.
Oh,
oh wow. Okay.
That's fair.
All right, so let's go now into our top 5.
All right.
Dom, go to your number 5.
Actually, my number 5 is Sakura Taisen 2 for the Saturn.
Wow, great lead-in. All right. Lita, what about your number 5?
Comic Zone.
Ooh,
Comic Zone. Wow.
Yeah.
I love that game. It was so hard,
so hard. My brother spent hours playing it. We would watch because I couldn't beat it.
I loved it because it was like this kind of brilliant art style
yeah,
meets gameplay.
Cool.
Like the art affected the gameplay.
Let's see, my number 5 is probably Choo Choo Rocket.
Choo Choo Rocket
is my number 6.
Choo Choo Rocket, Choo Rocket, Zugoi.
In addition to the awesome, awesome commercial they had for it in Japanese,
which is just pencil drawn mice being chased by cats
and walking into a rocket. Because that was pretty much what the game was.
If you're wondering what the hell I just sung, that was the song, and it translates to Choo Choo Rocket, save the kit mice. Choo Choo Rocket, cats are scary. Choo Choo Rocket,
rockets are cool.
Yeah.
Zubababa. We never figured out what that meant. But that's okay.
What do you mean you haven't figured out what that meant? It means boom. Or actually, it's the Japanese version of
I see. Well, I guess I learn something new every day. But yeah, I play, like, it was me and my roommate. And I played defense, he played offense. And just give you a testament to how stupidly brutal we were at that game that I could be listing defense and offense in such a manner.
I remember Choo Choo Rocket always being listed as the game where you can lose your friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
You do not make friends. There's a very good chance you lose your friends if you're not very careful with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be brutal.
The point where your friend will just take the controller, throw it down, and be like, screw this!
And never speak to you again.
That's why I had to play it on a DDR pad. They're like, why do you keep ending at 999? Because you guys aren't as good at this game as I am.
Like, that's when you get slapped. No, I'm just kidding.
No, actually, that's about right.
That's about right.
All right, well, my number five is going to kind of be more of like a franchise. We're talking about The House of the Dead.
Oh.
Or Typing of the Dead.
Typing of the Dead is really fun. Typing of the Dead was probably what I would choose as my number 11.
And just like, to me, think about it. Zombies, shooting zombies, I'm sold. That's it.
It's fair.
Fair.
I love that game. All right, let's go into number four. Come on.
My number four is Valkyria Chronicles.
Wow.
Very nice. Which is one of the best games that Sega has made in the past 10 years.
That you haven't bought yet, so go buy it now.
Yes. Those of you out there who didn't buy Valkyria Chronicles, it's a very good strategy game. Please. Please.
Hey, Sega.
No, don't save them, but give them money for the work that they've done.
Valkyria Chronicles is just a great franchise that they can build around. The canvas engine means that it's a moving piece of art once again. The strategy system is very solid in and of itself, even though, you know, it breaks down when your Alicia is level 20 and can solo maps.
Yeah.
On turn one. But other than that, great game. Great game. You should buy it for the PS3.
Don't
if you don't have
Iron
a PS3,
Man.
Then just buy the game anyway. And go to a friend's house who has a PS3. Please.
Yes, if you're holding Iron Man and Valkyria Chronicles,
wash that other hand
and
play.
You don't really
Valkyria.
Have a choice. So, Lita, what is your number four?
Aladdin.
Ooh.
That was a game that I could play. That was really fun. And the graphics were really good.
They worked
really
with
smooth.
Disney Animation Studios to actually draw out some of those sprites, too.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why it just
yeah.
looks so good. That was actually one of my favorite games on Genesis. It was the first Genesis game that made me super jealous because the Super Nintendo one was totally different. And it was all jumping and you never had the sword and...
Yeah.
Oh.
Neener.
Yeah, that was a rivalry game for me.
But, yeah, so my number four is... That was actually two games, so it was re-released. It's Skies of Arcadia.
That was number 12 on my list.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
No, I said 12 this time.
Yeah, it's so hard to choose. But
so hard to choose. I'm a Sega kid. There's a reason that Fred draws me as a Sega employee in Megatokyo. I'm a Sega kid.
I mean, the game system itself was, you know, pretty ordinary RPG, and, you know, random encounters and all that nonsense. But it was done with so much love. In addition to that, like, on top of all of that, on top of the fact that, you know, the character designs were awesome, everyone is really distinct, and, like, all of the, like, little side characters and everything, and there were all these, so much stuff you can do. Like, the whole game was about literally wandering around and finding new stuff, because that was one of the mechanics of it.
Although I do admit that I liked Skies of Arcadia better on the GameCube than on Dreamcast, specifically for that one part where there's the wind that keeps pushing back on you with the incredibly high encounter rate.
That's because you have a weak constitution.
Ooh.
We're going to have ourselves an RPG throwdown one of these days.
Fight.
You, me, Dragon Quest, slimes. How long can you stay awake killing slimes?
I guess
the
that's
same
fair.
Slime. Huh?
I guess that's
huh?
fair. But on another note before we move on, the other reason why I like Skies of Arcadia so much is because I eventually got the GameCube version, or Skies of Arcadia Legends. And it had the re-release, and it was in Japanese. And that, if I recall correctly,
introduced
is
you to
my introduction to Wakamoto F. Norio.
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. But yeah, I mean, I have access to adult diapers, so I will beat you in this Dragon Quest challenge.
I guess that's fair. Although, you do realize I'm married to a Japanese woman.
Yeah, so? You're married to a Japanese woman. Are you going to put on those diapers yourself?
No.
Yeah. That means that I'm going to win. I'm going to stand up first.
Because I don't have to.
Okay, moving on.
Okay.
Virtual tennis for all the reasons that I talked about earlier. Number three, Dom.
Virtual tennis. My number three is Sonic number 2 because it was the first co-op game that I ever seriously played. Pit Fighter doesn't count. And it just offered everything. It had great art direction, great level design, great music. And I was the cat's paw. And it introduced a lot of, you know, new mechanics to the Sonic series that would stick, you know, the crouch dash, I think it introduced there.
Oh, yeah.
And also, something to give every person out there who wants to design a platform game, casino levels are really fun.
Yeah, I
really
agree.
Fun. Casino I always ran out of time on the casino level because I was just sticking myself in the slot machine.
Yeah, me too. Oh my god.
Nice. Should we bring back the Gears of War casino level request?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
It would be awesome.
It would be.
If Mad World had a casino level.
Yes. You know what? I'm gonna lay down dollars to donuts. I'm gonna lay down a $5 bet right now with you guys. I say yes, Mad World will have a casino level.
Oh my goodness.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you like chop off the guy's head and then they have
it? Not,
just like in No More Heroes.
Ah, yeah, that's another example where casinos are fun. Gambling, very fun.
All right. So who's number three are we on right now? We're on Lita's?
I know.
Yes, we're on Lita's, number three.
I think my number three was Earthworm Jim.
Ooh.
I don't like, yeah,
like
you guys.
A multi-platform game, no. Too. But I remember, yeah, you grew up as a Sega kid, and I remember Earthworm Jim kind of always struck more as a Genesis kind of title, right, than Super Nintendo.
Well, it was just so wacky.
Yeah, I always thought it was funny.
It was the cartoon. So much... I remember the cartoon theme song.
Yeah. Theme song. Oh, really? Do you?
I remember.
Prove it.
Oh, God. Let me. I'm trying to get my voice that high. Hold on while I squeeze myself a bit.
No, I don't need to see that. Thank you.
Jim was just a good little Scotty little worm, but he got... Oh, but it wasn't, but a spacesuit fall into his head.
Oh, no.
I have to go back and look at stuff now. Dang, I have failed as an uber nerd.
But yeah, I remember.
Earthworm Jim.
I remember you could do funny things with him. And it wasn't that hard either. Like, that was a little funnier.
Okay. I know this was post the loss of the Dreamcast. So.
Well, mine was number four. My number four is Valkyria, so you know.
Yeah, but, well, this was right after, so it was still fresh, but the PS2 release of Shinobi. Because that was one of the most fun games I've ever played.
It hated you. We hated it.
And that's
yet,
okay.
The thing is that when you cleared a level, you just felt so accomplished.
It's
I am better at this than most people I know now.
Yeah.
I mean, did you ever manage to one-shot the last boss?
Two shot.
Yeah, same here. I never actually managed to kill the last boss in one hit. But we saw a video of it. I mean, I brought that DVD to the anime club once. The DVD of the re-release of the PS2 Shinobi that showed you perfect videos where Danny and I were just mesmerized. We're going, holy crap, this guy is better at this game than we will ever be. And then I think we never played Shinobi again.
Never had to, really.
It's like watching perfect videos of Knights.
Or Guitar Hero.
You just go, I will never be able to match this, so there's no point anymore.
Especially when it's by a 10-year-old.
Like, oh, God, yeah.
Oh, through the Fire and the Flames guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I stopped playing.
But yeah, Shinobi, like, and plus all of the bosses were, you know, really unique. They all had little shticks, and they all had separate means of defeating them. And I remember playing through one of the levels just to get used to one-shotting the boss, just because one-shotting the boss was just so much fun.
And you got a special for it.
Yeah.
You got a special video for
it. It was just so badass. I mean,
yeah.
Because he's a ninja, and that's okay.
All right, well, my number three, I'm going to be really quick on this, too, because I also expressed a huge amount of love for it earlier, and that's Shenmue.
Do you know where I can find sailors? Do you know where sailors hang out? I mean, we would ask that every week to each other for no good reason. We would just walk up to each other. I would just walk up to you and go, "Hey, Kevin, do you know where I can find some sailors?"
Oh my god!
And I'd be like, "How are you able to hold two Butterfingers in your sock?"
But yeah,
and suspend it from my shorts.
But yeah, Shenmue was awesome, and if only because I have two friends of mine who actually played the Japanese version through, of Shenmue 2 through, I think. Actually, it might have been the first one. I don't remember anymore. All I remember is, if you walk up to either of them and go, "Shenhua," they'll immediately respond with, "Nani?" And then they'll look at themselves and go, "What did you just do?" Because it's just so ingrained in their heads now.
Oh my god. That's cool.
All right, Dom, so what is number two?
It's a tie, sadly.
Oh,
between,
what? That's
it's
cheating.
Just, it is cheating. I'm sneaking in extras. Number two is a tie between Radiant Silvergun and Gunstar Heroes.
Yeah, that's fair. They're both because treasure games.
They're both treasure games, and I just can play each of... If I had only three games to bring with me to a desert island before I die, then they would have to be Radiant Silvergun, Gunstar Heroes, and then my number one game, which will be coming out.
Oh, damn.
Okay, so... I was gonna say Air Buster because that was my first mop, but then I realized Radiant Silvergut is a better one.
And see? Better. It was just
with co-op, and that was so much fun. And it's like, they have a mode where it's unlimited lives, so you don't die, so you can still beat the game.
Yeah, Saturn mode. Arcade mode where you just keep putting in book orders.
Yeah.
Alright. Danny, you're
number
two.
I know this one's gonna come out completely from left field for most of you.
Wait, it's not Radiant Silver Gun?
No. Crazy Taxi.
Really?
Crazy Taxi is your number two? I loved Crazy Taxi so much. I got so good at that.
Whoa, I want to see you play then. Like,
because for me, in terms of driving games, there is nothing more viscerally satisfying than boosting off the edge of a ramp, skidding halfway, and then doing a 270 in midair so that I can land sideways and land into the parking garage so that I can actually head in the right direction afterwards.
Oh,
it is
and
fun.
It was one of those games in the arcade where the better you were at it, the longer you played too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And all right.
Man, I want to play a lot of these games again.
Yeah, see,
well, my number two is of no surprise. It's Radiant Silver Gun.
I'm sorry. I should have put a tie in there too, but I guess that's okay.
Cheating. But
so, I cheated. I put in 11 games on this list.
Dom, what is number one? What is your number one desert island game?
Streets of Rage 2.
Oh.
I had the music in that game stuck in my head for 6 years. Just, so, you know, the...
That game was fun.
Grandpa! I can play that game in my sleep with my eyes closed. I've felt my thumbs moving in order to do Grand Upper backwards. By the way, the retreating Grand Upper because it's better. And I can play that game in my sleep. I can sing that game in my sleep. I can shout that game in my sleep. I played that game more than almost any game ever until World of Warcraft.
Wow.
That's crazy. Because it's not that long of a game either.
No, it's not. But it's a really good game.
Lita?
I like to throw knives. That was fun. Oh, I guess my number one was Sonic 2. That was my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
Sonic 2. It's
a pretty classic title.
Yeah.
It is a classic title.
Wow.
Okay, and yeah, this is actually also probably going to come as a bit of a surprise. House of the Dead 2.
Oh.
Yeah!
I'm not that surprised.
Yeah!
Because you know what? Double-fisted those things.
You know what? Before I ever became a fighting game player, before I'd had my Beatmania stint, before I even had that little temptation with playing DDR, before my arthritis kicked in, I learned how to two-fist House of the Dead 2 on 2 credits.
Wow. 2 credits?
One for each side.
Oh, that's crazy.
Dang, man.
Kevin, what's your number one?
My number one is going to come out of left field completely, and this is not a console game from Sega.
Uh-oh.
It is the arcade version of Michael Jackson's Moonwalker, which we mentioned earlier.
Moonwalker's my number 13.
Oh, as a kid, I remember I played it before,
Robot Michael.
I was like, this is the best co-op fighting game I've ever played. I've never gotten to play it ever again. I think it's on MAME, though. But
it is on MAME, but it's not the same. It's not the same.
Yeah.
You need that cabinet experience with the three joysticks and the three people. And
Man, I want to play it again. So many of these games I want to play right now.
Squeezing in number 14, Mickey Mouse's Castle of Illusion.
You've got to stop doing that.
I really have got to stop doing that. Oh.
All right. So that's been the wrap-up of our Sega episode for the S-Words podcast. You can find us online at www.s-words-podcast.com or email us suggestions about future topics at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. You can also find us on Twitter, and by us I mean primarily Dom, at the account twitter.com/s_words. And don't forget, we also have a Facebook group now where we pretty much put up some topics every once in a while on discussion board just to try to reach out to some of you listeners out there. And as usual, why don't we go straight into the quote sound off? Dom, would you love to lead us off?
Genesis does with Nintendo.
Sega.
Sega Ta Sanshiro.
Sega Ta Sanshiro. Sega Ta Sanshiro.
Toya!
Sega Ta Sanshiro. 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 Sega Ta Sanshiro.